Hello, and welcome to Awin Talks, the affiliate and partner marketing podcast. I'm your host, Rob Davidson from Awin's Global Strategy team, and I have a special guest co-host today. It's my usual companion, Kevin, is off on his summer holidays, topping up his tan in sunny Scotland. Long-time listeners will recognise our co-host, Golden Tones, though, as I believe it's his fifth appearance on the pod. So a warm welcome then to Awin's product marketing manager, Ed Chapu. How are you, Ed?
I'm very well, thank you. I was just thinking as you were introducing me, how many times has it been? I was thinking four, but it could well be five. Matchball was a long time ago.
Yeah, it feels like it was. I think it's innumerable now. I would say we're beyond counting, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. And it's great to be back. A pleasure as always.
That's very mutual. How are things in product marketing at the moment?
Really good. The team's growing, allowing us to do a lot more of the stuff that we want to do and really kind of get information out there to our customers and our staff as well.
And when you say the team's growing, that you're not including your newborn baby in that, are
not
you?
Not as a full-time employee just yet. I mean, maybe he's, you know, on kind of quarter hours because of his day napping, but yeah, he's contributing well. Yeah, we get to run everything through him, and if he agrees, then, you know, it's going out.
It's been given the green light. On today's episode, we'll be speaking to a couple of extremely innovative partners who are really pushing the boundaries of the channel. First up, our very own Paul Stewart, Strategic Partnerships Director at Awin, speaks to Steve Brown, CEO and founder of Moonpool. Now, they're a relatively new tracking consultancy with decades of affiliate industry experience behind them. And their analytics solution has been built to audit affiliate tracking links at scale. Now, that made them the perfect strategic partner for us, as with more than 21,000 advertiser programs across the globe, auditing tracking links can be an enormous and quite onerous task at times across all those various websites. Awin announced a partnership with Moonpool just last month, and so we thought it a good opportunity to invite Steve on to find out more about their solution and the state of tracking in the industry today more generally. And following that conversation, I sat down with Katie Hughes, Client Success Director at Intently, one of our tech partners, to talk about another new update from them. We recently unveiled a new one-click activation process for implementing Intently on advertiser sites, and Katie was kind enough to drop in and tell us more about how that's helping brands speedily access their conversion optimization tech. Before all that though, Ed, you're not purely here out of selfless goodwill, are you? You've got your own agenda in wanting to share an update with listeners on the publisher recommendations tool we launched back in February. So can you remind us again about what that is and how it's faring?
Of course, yeah, I have a few agenda points that I need to get through right here.
Oh, okay.
The publisher recommendations tool was something we brought out to enhance our publisher directory. So what are advertisers using, you know, to find suitable partners? And, you know, there's a lot of partners in there, and it can be a real challenge to find, okay, who sticks out there, who's going to work well for me. And a lot of time can be spent sort of going through that, really kind of digging down to find these shining stars that are right for your program. So what we've done is started using sort of machine learning, kind of our own sort of background wizardry, to create recommendations that we can push out to advertisers saying, hey, based on a few things, we think they're a pretty good fit. And we think, you know, they should be able to deliver some decent results for you. And advertisers get 25 of these every day. So every 24 hours, we deploy a new list of publishers, but we only refresh those that have been rated. And that's something kind of important to underlie is, you know, click on the rating for the relationship within the UI. Let us know if it's good. Let us know if it's bad. One thing I did notice, kind of looking through some of the results, people tend to move towards rating positively, and there weren't as many bad recommendations as I'd expect. And given the tool's learning, you'd expect, you know, not all of them are going to be great. So it's really just a reminder, if you're using it, the more you rate, the more publishers you'll get and the better they'll become. So even if they're rubbish, rate them rubbish. The publisher doesn't see it. It's only about how suitable they are for your program. It's not a personal slur on that publisher, and they will never know. But I mean, looking at the, I mean, to get into some of the meat of it, have a look at some of the actual results. Unfortunately, I don't have actual names of clients that I can share with you just yet. But what I do have is just some really kind of positive results that we're seeing. So, I mean, it's driven quite a lot of revenue. We've had, you know, over kind of 20,000 ratings of publishers, so that kind of activity. And this has been, I suppose, globally from mid-March when it was available for everyone. So we're looking at about, you know, kind of 3 months or so. So we've had a lot of publishers being rated, which is a great amount of data coming back in. But when we start looking at the actual relationships, one or two stand out with some pretty high sales figures, but I think they were larger publishers that would be recommended to a program for whatever reason. They weren't working together, and naturally, whether that was an oversight, once they start working with them, they start seeing some bigger results. But when
that's
we
really
look
good
at
though, isn't it, in its own right? Because it's fantastic. Know, that might be a gap that seems really obvious in retrospect, but actually is something that they just maybe hadn't got around to discovering, that there was this partner out there that they just hadn't thought of to kind of join to their program.
Exactly. I think I saw one was a certain voucher code provider, and I mean, I'm guessing the advertiser may have thought, you know, there are quite a few voucher code providers, I've overlooked this one, I've chosen to work with someone else. They came on board and saw some great sales. What's also quite interesting, I think what's important is, you know, that it's delivering quality partnerships, and it's delivering, you know, it's delivering sort of a really great fit. And then when you start looking through at the conversion rates for some of these programs, and you know that they're not driving the highest volume of sales, but we start looking, okay, well, let's look at least, you know, kind of 15 sales plus. And we're seeing conversion rates about 10 accounts that are sitting between 20 and 40% conversion rate. One of those, I think, is 26 sales and is 48% conversion rate, which isn't a huge amount of sales, but it shows, I mean, that's a great fit. And just the more traffic they continue to provide, you know, hopefully that conversion rate is going to maintain. And, you know, it's a great partnership. It seems like they're so well suited. And we're seeing that in a lot of places. And I think seeing some increase in average order values, I need to dig into those details a little bit more just to see how much we're seeing that growth. But overall, engagement with the tools has been great. The kind of the commission and that's been driven for the publishers, and the revenue for the advertisers over the short amount of time is absolutely fantastic. So I would encourage everyone, you know, to carry on using it. And if you're not using it, then, you know, check it out, start having a look and rating these publishers, and hopefully find.
The important takeaway is to not be fearful of giving negative reviews.
Oh, definitely.
Feel free to slag off a partner if they're not a right fit.
Yeah, the only person that will know will be the algorithm. So maybe when the machines take over the world, it might have some revenge. But you know, until then, you know, it goes back into a data set and just helps make things better for you. And it's, you know, like, you know, if it's a bad fit, then we won't give you more like this. You know, we can take that into account.
Well, I don't want to disappear down that particular wormhole with the Google engineer talking about the sentience of the recent
oh, yes.
Algorithm, yeah, bot that he's been chatting to that he thinks is alive and well. So let's save that for a dedicated AI podcast episode, I think, in the future. So what else is new over product marketing?
Well, we've got hopefully all our listeners will be signed up to be receiving the product marketing newsletter, which is being sent out. And if you're not, then get in touch with your account contact, get signed up to that. You may have a previous email, which you can just ensure you didn't unsubscribe, you're still receiving those. And that will give you kind of the latest updates from product marketing campaigns that are working on new products, some of the existing products, just re-looking at what we're doing with the team, some of the great tools we have, and sort of the things that we can offer you that you may not be using, such as publisher recommendations. Alongside that, you know, we're also looking at a kind of server to server. That's a big focus at the moment, server to server tracking. Where we're really, you know, looking to reinforce all the kind of the tracking, you know, kind of throughout the whole network. And there's a lot of resource and time that's being sort of dedicated from kind of our tech staff as well to make sure that, you know, if advertisers are concerned about this and they want to go through the process upgrade to server to server and just make it more robust and reliable, then, you know, we have people on hand who are ready to speak, ready to kind of guide you through that process, tell you what you need to know, what you may need to do, how much, you know, potential uplift even you may be able to see in your account through this. So worth talking with your account contact if that is something that you're looking to do.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for the update, Ed. But now on to our interviews. Later, I speak to Katie at Intently. But right now, Paul chats to Steve Brown, CEO at Moonpool.
So I'm pleased today to be joined by Bonafide All-Star Affiliate all-star Steve Brown, founder of Moonpool and several other great online focused businesses. Our aim today is to try and cover off in 15 minutes a brief overview of the state of online tracking and how we've got ourselves to where we find ourselves today, before then specifically examining the state of tracking in the affiliate industry, which will set the context nicely for understanding a bit more about the partnership between Awin and Moonpool. So to kick things off, let's talk about online tracking back in 2000 when you founded Buyout, which will later go on to become part of Affiliate Window. Now Awin. So to help set the context for this, here's a fun trivia question for you. What do you think the click-through rate was on the first banner ad, debatably served by AT&T back in 1994?
Crikey, it's going to be a high number compared to today. The question is how high compared to today? I'm going to go with, it was obviously put out by their PR team, so I'm going to go with something like 60%.
Good. It was 44%, which I'm pretty sure you close that campaign for fraud these days. You sort of came back with that. But I think it nicely highlights a simpler time. So, Steve, when you founded Buyout, how were you tracking sales? What were the main areas of inaccuracy that you were conscious of at the time?
So, to be honest, I'll answer the second bit first. Main sources of inaccuracy. There weren't a huge number that we were really thinking about at the time. And how do we do it? We started off by what would today be called third-party tracking, which is setting a cookie on the redirect through a network. And in those days, it wasn't really the concept of a third-party cookie or a first-party cookie. It was just something that was put on the client's machine during the browsing experience. So any website could read any cookie. So it was remarkably easy to set cookies and therefore for affiliate networks to track, which I guess does bring you on to the more serious answer to the second part of the question. What were you aware of with regards to tracking issues? And publishers are incredibly inventive people. And actually fraud became an issue very early on in affiliate marketing. You can find lots of stories about how people pulled off very, very big frauds. There were smaller frauds going on. One of the things I remember back in the day at Buyout, we used to pay people in checks, and people always said, why are you sending us checks? Can't you do bank transfers? But it was an amazing way to identify low-level fraud. So clusters of £100 going out to four or five addresses. I remember Twickenham was one area. And we'd then look into it, we'd pull the checks and realise it was just a low-level bit of essentially click fraud or cookie stuffing fraud. And so that was the biggest challenge with tracking. And running a tight network basically kept us with a low level of fraud.
Yeah. So it's almost the opposite problem. It was almost too easy to place cookies and track. So, you know, you could set a cookie for 10 years back then, it would still be there. It could still be read by everyone. And it was almost like it was too open, which kind of, I think, is a nice way to say, if we think about where we are now and the biggest and most impactful challenges that tracking face, probably a consequence of what happened by making it so easy in the beginning, right? Probably plays some part in there. I mean, in your opinion, what do you think have been some of the most impactful changes between then and now?
You've got the improvement of networks' typical tracking. You've got outlying tracking, where some advertisers had amazing ability to track sales. So back in Buyout days, we had clients who would display a bespoke phone number for each of the publishers on the account. Lovely way to track offline. The publishers loved it, but it wasn't part of a scalable solution really for a network. And I think networks really have to be offering those scalable solutions. And one of the challenges has been, it was almost easier to get clients to put server-to-server tracking in place in 2004 than it is in 2022, because the tech team all worked in the same room and they didn't have an ISO-compliant approach to putting code live. It was, this looks like it will work. We'll do it. And it made life a lot easier for doing more innovative, more reliable tracking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting point. So as websites were themselves simpler at that point, mm-hmm. so, you know, server-to-server integrations were easier to do back then because the website behavior was less complex. There were fewer different providers having different parts of the website.
Yeah, and I mean, those days, there was no Facebook. I mean, going back to those days, the concept of a tag manager didn't exist. So it was really hard-coded approaches to setting cookies, whether it was in the header or whether it was in the what's now called the DOM.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I think if we think about where we are now, there's a couple of driving forces then that we probably have identified. There's the websites themselves and consumer behavior online has become more complex. You know, there are more partners, more intermediaries, more different functionalities that you want a website to be able to do, which has made stuff more complicated. So that, and because of that, we've had to adapt. And so you saw networks change the way, you know, offer different ways of tracking a sale. You know, while third party was perfectly robust back in 2000, you now need several different ways of tracking a user to get the same level of accuracy. You know, if you're standing still, you're going backwards almost. But there's also, I'm interested to get your take on this. Like you mentioned fraud and some of the bad actors in the space, and this was by no means just an affiliate issue, as you know, in the wider space as well, cookie stuffing and whatnot has been there. It has led to like a consumer awareness and especially a legislative awareness of tracking online and what that means. And that has undoubtedly, I think, as well, made the tracking online more complicated for everyone, good or bad actors. So I'd be interested in your steer on what you think some of the most impactful legislative changes have been and your take on whether they achieved their objective or whether they were good or bad things.
Crikey. So I think for affiliate marketing, the biggest impact was how it was stated consent should be gathered within the GDPR legislation that actually had a knock-on effect to how consent therefore had to be gathered under the PECR legislation from mid-2000s. So prior to GDPR Day in May 2018, consent for cookies that was already there could be gathered in a remarkably light touch way. But the consent requirements under GDPR, which has led to today's consent management platforms, actually applies retrospectively to the PECR legislation. And I think that is the biggest impact. And there's so much misunderstood about how PCR and GDPR interact. And the GDPR personal data has a legitimate interest opt-out. PCR, there is no, it's only a small piece of data opt-out. It's quite black and white. If you're setting a cookie, it needs consent. And then the other piece that's misunderstood is we talk about cookie legislation, but PECR talks about anything that's actually put on the user's machine. And so that therefore means JavaScript within the page that's being loaded on the consumer's machine as well. So the combination need the consent. So the second part of your question is it good or bad? Is it in the consumer interest or not? And I think the consumers I talk to, i.e. friends in the pub really, they have an understanding of what a cookie is, but they don't have an understanding of what JavaScript on their machine could do. And they don't understand that the consent platform is actually gathering consent for the JavaScript as well. And I mean, post-Brexit, you know, the government about 6 months ago, 8 months ago, said we're going to cut the red tape. We're going to cut the red tape around consent platforms. And broadly, I just think that's wrong. I think users should know and consent to the JavaScript that's being put on their machine because it can do very wide-ranging things.
Yeah, the problem is, JavaScript, right? Like, yeah, it's super flexible, but it's also incredibly open, and a lot of people don't realize the ramifications of what could be or done through that. I mean, the TCF point, the consent management platform point you make is particularly pertinent. I think I read recently that there are around about 120 different consent management platforms out there, and they're just the ones that integrate with TCF alone. Mm-hmm. So the idea that, you know, a retailer is going to know specifically how to trigger each bit of JavaScript and the behavior that's required for each of those JavaScript providers within that CMP, you know, managing front end consent preferences with back end server side saying is pretty wild, right? Like I'm in the weeds of this and would probably struggle to tell you exactly how each of those should be done. So the idea that every retailer and publisher is going to be able to manage this themselves is one I think is unlikely. But I agree with your point about consent is the right path to take. I think the problem is that we've created a very complicated situation that needs unpicking in some way, which is a nice segue into Moonpool. So it'd be great to talk at how you help networks, publishers, retailers, the space in general, untangle some of that complexity.
So the philosophy behind Moonpool is more reliable tracking, better quality business information leads to better decision making. And that, I mean, that's our aim. So if a Moonpool is about looking at whether the conditions are set up for commission to flow, if a user goes on to buy something after having been referred by a publisher. So how does that help? One, if commission is being lost because things are not being tracked, that's in absolutely everybody's interest. It's in the advertiser's interest as well, because it actually allows them to see the value of their channel. It allows them to measure what's happening. It allows them to understand which affiliate sales they prefer over other ones, as it were. So the advertiser benefits, the publisher clearly benefits from more commission, and the network sitting in the middle actually benefits from actually having a better quality experience with its customers and its suppliers. So that's what Moonpool is doing. I'm struggling to remember your precise question there, Paul, so that you will tell me again.
Yes, I was asking how you help networks, retailers, publishers, all actors in the space untangle some of the complexity that is the current reality of tracking sales online.
Yeah. Okay, so what the way that we're tracking it is we've got an online platform that at scale, the network or a publisher or indeed the advertiser can put, whether it's 100 links or 10,000 links through Moonpool, and we will do an analysis of, are the conditions set up when the user arrives at the landing page correct for commission to be attributed? So principally, that's looking at how the first party cookie is set. Is it set correctly with the right name, with the right contents? Is it set at all? And if it's not being set properly, we're giving advice on where we think it's going wrong. And that's crucial because human nature is, if you go to someone and say, we don't think this is happening for this reason, they're quite likely to go, you know what, you're right. But if you go to a developer and say, we don't think this link is tracking, you'll most likely get a roll of their eyes and they'll go and see, well, we had some sales in the last hour, so therefore it must be okay. And so we're helping untangle the issues around tracking, allowing non-technical people to go to technical people with an explanation that allows an efficient fix.
Yeah. And so I can speak from my own experience, and the driving force behind our partnership is that you've taken something that is incredibly nuanced and complex and created a very simplified way of being able to understand where the problem is, but also drill down to the detail required. So from the driving force behind why we're in partnership now, I think, was when I was able to see that whether you're a account manager trying to understand, does this work or not, you can see that. But if you're a developer, it's like, why does this not work? You can go all the way down to, you know, is the JavaScript firing? What is the behavior of that? What is the CMP behavior? Is it, what CMP is it? You know, this type of information is not always forthcoming. When was the cookie set? What was in the cookie? These type of things. And I think that's the kind of solution that is needed to unpick what, you know, we discussed earlier, this hugely complex situation that we now find ourselves in, driven by both the way people are shopping online, the different devices they're using, the restrictions that are placed within browsers as to how cookies are used, the different JavaScripts, the different tracking types. All of this means that I think to manually review this, or to have any manual element really as a part of your gathering of data, means that you're not going to be able to do it at scale. And so I think that the combination of a solution that does all of this means that you can create a much more understandable and compelling state of understanding for say all of tracking integrations, I think is quite exciting prospect. I mean, we touched on server to server earlier as one of the ways that we are that most networks now are combating some of the deprecation of third party tracking and JavaScript restrictions for various reasons. So Moonpool are able to understand server-to-server integrations and be configured to look for that. That's correct?
That's correct, yes. I mean, there's slightly less signals of server-to-server, but fundamentally most server-to-server implementations require a cookie being set. And I mean, again, that's one of the poor elements of terminology you hear about cookieless tracking. It's less in affiliate, but more in display. And what they actually mean is not third-party cookies. There's signatures there that we can definitely help with on server-to-server. And I think that's important to emphasize that Moonpool is more than just looking at what the network is doing. And actually, just about every network's core tracking works very well. Issues happen at the advertiser side, but also at the publisher side. So publishers can send traffic to in odd ways. So put in one merchant ID, but a deep link for a different merchant. So things break for reasons other than what's going on the advertiser's page.
I think we're approaching the end of our time. So to wrap things up, can you give us a bit of insight into what it is Moonpool will be looking to focus on next? So you've built a solution that helps networks, publishers, retailers, whomever, understand how tracking implementations are working. And that helps us improve accuracy, which is an important part of being able to understand what they're doing online. But what are the areas that you think that you could add to?
I think the Moonpool is about helping all players in the industry, and we want better relationships between publishers and advertisers. And I love the concept of outcome-based media, where affiliate marketing gets seen seamlessly alongside display, TV, paid search at the advertiser level. And we want to be providing the data, the business information that just accelerates that and makes affiliate more prominent part of the mix. And ultimately, from Moonpool's perspective, there's more links there to be audited on a daily, weekly basis. So we want to be helping get rid of some of the dysfunctionalities wherever they may lie in the industry.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that. So, in summary, the improvement of accuracy and the standardization and the improvement of understanding generally will bring about more value on all sides of the relationship, publisher, retailer to network, and that can help drive the conversation. You know, from where it is now, where I think we probably focus on the CPA and that to more of the value that is driven because of it, you know, and the size of the industry certainly warrants that and sits us alongside some of those other channels you mentioned. I think that's a very positive note to end on. So on that, I'd like to thank you for joining us today, Steve. I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Yep, that's my pleasure. Thanks, Paul.
Hi, Katie. Thanks so much for joining us today on the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Recovering good from the long weekend.
Yes, we did just have the Royal Jubilee, which is 4 days off, which is unusual, I would say.
Yeah, but very welcomed.
Indeed, definitely. Well, you've recently joined Intently from the agency side. You're currently doing this client success director role over at Intently. You used to work at Acquire, one of the UK's boutique performance marketing agencies. I wondered, first of all, what are you most looking forward to in this new role that you've got?
So I think it's more the depth of kind of the opportunity and working with some of like the most amazing brands. Like we've got some really great, huge kind of clients on board at Acquire. Like I learned a lot. I helped derive kind of their, yeah, like as you said, that premium kind of boutique service level. And it was just something I kind of wanted to bring across to join too intently with, like the technology that they've got and the data that we capture. And just the opportunity that is there to kind of collaborate with brands on any pain points in like customer journeys and creating, I guess, like new products and campaigns and things like that, and seeing them actually on these kind of massive websites and stuff. It's quite a buzz. So yeah, that's kind of the main thing I think that excites me, and just being, yeah, part of, I guess, like technological change and different areas around that, and just trying to... Bring the service level up to, I guess, what the tech kind of deserves.
Yeah, definitely. Now, talking of the tech itself, we've just announced a brand new update to how Intently can work with Awin clients through this one-click activation process. So for the audience, could you just tell us a bit about that process and how it works and why it can really be of such benefit to brands who are using it?
Yeah, definitely. So pretty much we've enabled it so that all of Awin's clients can quickly adopt the Intently technology. We can utilise our service through literally one click, which is obviously the dream. I think quite regularly we hear like one of the biggest blockers for brands when working with any tech partner, not just ourselves, is kind of like the resource level on the brand side, and maybe even like the understanding of the tech or even the resource before they've been able to kind of prove the worth. So by allowing kind of this one click integration, it allows the brands obviously to work with us. There's zero technical integration required. And we can do a lot of testing our side to like obviously prove wider business cases across the board. I think the main thing as well is like, obviously brands work with you guys are already a trusted partner. So allowing like this one click activation stuff kind of develops the trust too intently as well. Which is quite a nice, a positive thing for obviously the brands and a benefit there. And yeah, as I said, obviously it's one click, they're activated with us. We reach out, it's pretty much can be live within, I guess, like 24, 48 hours. So for brands, from going from having, I guess, nothing potentially on site to then a tool that can help convert their customers within that time frame is quite a big step, I guess, moving forward. And
yeah, I think there's something about that speed and agility that's so attractive right now, isn't there? And it goes beyond just obviously when you're talking about technology partnerships like this. I saw a great illustration of this from Monzo Bank. Or was it Monzo? I'm trying to think, actually. Maybe it was Starling. And somebody had kind of created a document that illustrated the number of steps that it took, or clicks that it took, for a user to set up a new account with one of the more legacy or traditional banks compared to more of the app-based digital neo banks. And, you know, for the likes of Starling and Monzo, et cetera, and Revolut, it was maybe three or four clicks. And then you looked at some of the more kind of traditional ones like Halifax or First Direct, both of whom actually I still bank with. So I should probably change that. But it was like, you know, 25, 30 clicks. And it's just a really powerful way of crystallizing, I think, the difference in how quick some of these smarter businesses can work. And that's how I'm kind of starting to kind of see what Intently are offering to brands, because it's that really swift ability to suddenly implement some cutting edge technology on their own website. And you have the combination of the kind of commercial model through the affiliate channel, or, you know, predicated on a CPA. And it just makes it such a compelling thing, doesn't it?
I think, yeah, it's like the trust, the fact that it's risk-free, like you said, it's all on the CPA kind of basis. And we can develop the campaigns then with the clients as they kind of go along. We can get, obviously, buy-in from business stakeholders. That's the dog. Obviously, he wants to be involved. But yeah, I think it's just something that makes it so much easier for... I've worked with clients before and you have to go through various different levels of sign-off and forecasting and all that kind of stuff. But it's then harder to prove the outcomes. Whereas if you, it's just this one click, you've got to trial it for a week. You've got then the basic points to prove to your wider business there as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, talking more broadly about technology partnerships, which we've really seen explode in interest in the channel in the last couple of years, what do you think is really driving that increased demand at the moment? And why do you think advertisers seem to be more open to working with these types of partner in our channel right now as opposed to in the past?
I think it's mainly just the competition for the same customer.
Yeah.
Obviously, with all these macro factors, so we've got COVID, we've got cost of living, obviously the war in Ukraine and things like that at the moment. So it's more essential than ever for brands to capture and convert the customers that they're driving to site, especially because there is such competition. So even my mum never really shopped online, didn't understand it, like has converted massively. Like she does her groceries and like everything now online. It's quite scary. But I think we, through COVID and stuff, it changed like habits for everyone. So yeah, it is the fact that we've got obviously a lot more people shopping online. It's just trying now, I think, to convert them as best as possible. Like if you've already got them on site, you've already got them interested. It is the learnings around that. And I think as well, businesses essentially didn't realise they could use these tech solutions without huge resource and the huge investment. And it's not a case of having to develop such technology in-house. And they can actually, I guess, utilise the affiliate channel because it is on that kind of the CPA-based campaigns. And like we were saying previously about all the testing and creating kind of business cases around it as well.
Yeah.
And I think just in general, like we've obviously been speaking about data for years and years and years within the channel. And it's just brands know that data is kind of the key, like just driving traffic to site and being kind of top funnel heavy isn't enough. Like we need to understand the customers. You need to effectively communicate with each customer. Like no customer is the same. And it's trying to derive from, I guess, different areas of the website and different problem points and potential reasons why, for us especially, like your customers are bouncing off site and what can you obviously do there. So I think in general, including us, like technology publishers provide transparency and we can help drive value off the back of understanding, using the data, knowing what customers are kind of looking for on your site. And hopefully then obviously increasing conversion at the end of it, but also different metrics such as increasing the AOV, cross-selling, and also obviously converting new customers that were potentially even just coming to your brand to browse, but we've turned them into then like loyal customers, but also then focusing on your existing customers. Because I think that's, again, previously before kind of the pandemic, there was always this focus on new customers and everyone then kind of forgot about your existing customers. They were just like, there, they're your customers. But now with all this competition that's kind of coming through, it is like, yeah, all brands now realise, oh yeah, okay, we need to go after our new ones, but we also need to nurture and keep our existing ones. Because obviously our competitor brands have new customer strategies to try and steal them away from us.
And that's the thing, isn't it? I think that if you're able to enhance your customer experiences on your website, which is this space where you have direct contact with them and you're interacting and engaging with them, and you want to present the best possible version of yourselves as a brand, as a shop, as a, you know, an e-commerce environment. And if that customer has that great experience, then they're much more likely to return. And so you're almost saving on your future marketing costs by establishing that loyalty, making the site that much stickier, and hopefully inciting them to come back and return.
Yeah. Exactly.
So talking of how some brands have definitely been doing that effectively, you had some recent success at the Performance Marketing Awards. You had a win for your health and beauty campaign with Feel Unique. So can you tell us a bit about that campaign?
Yeah, so obviously we were absolutely chuffed to bits with it. Like the category was obviously one of the main categories and it's super competitive. So yeah, working with a brand such as Feel Unique is obviously great for us. We work really collaboratively with them, discussing different pain points and things. And They have actually been quite heavily invested in our like product roadmap and driving different products. And we've worked with them as kind of like an extension of the team as well. But for the award, yeah, we again focusing kind of around content-led campaigns, which I think obviously brands again are trying to develop and do a bit more through. But I think it was a great campaign for us to look at that. Yes, we can. We are obviously on-site optimizations, but we can focus on a kind of content element to it as well, and target kind of product discovery and different things like that through our overlays. So what we actually did, we set up two different campaigns. One was the mascara. They wanted to read or promote like kind of their USPs or their best-selling mascaras. So what we did was like an editorial overlay where you could read obviously those USPs, and then we directed to that product page in order to purchase. And then the second one, we did a personalized kind of gamified approach for their fragrances. So did kind of like a little fragrance quiz, and then it was like a pre-filtered kind of landing page based on the quiz answers. So again, like no two customers were kind of the same. It all depended on the answers that you gave. I think there was four or five different questions throughout the quiz, and it just again helped the journey for the customer, made them feel more personalized. And those were different campaigns again, and I think we're rolling them out to various different clients as well. So it's quite a nice case study for us to obviously have as well. And again, it's not just focusing on, I guess, like the discount incentive element. We're actually we're converting like the customers through like the engagement level and that kind of part, rather than being like, hey, here's 10% off, which I think, again, similarly, like some brands have always thought that that's what kind of overlays and different things like that are. But there's so much creativity that you can flare around it as well. And we also got highly commended for curries. I'm just going to pop chocolate.
Can't forget that.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, talking about the business's plans for the rest of the year, looking to the future, is there anything that you can tell us, any new solutions or products that you can give us a sneak peek of or that we can look forward to seeing?
Yeah, so as I said, like we work kind of with all of our brands on kind of a feedback loop, just based on like, I guess, their needs, their KPIs, any pain points and things like that. So we're always, I guess, driving new campaigns out there with our current products. We are actually launching an update on our code analytics platform. So what we've seen is one of the biggest problems in the industry is kind of the lack of visibility and, I guess, control over like all of the voucher codes that are kind of out there. And again, leading on from the conversion conversations we were having before, you don't want a customer coming to your site with a voucher code that doesn't work, then bouncing off back on, just trying to find all these voucher codes. So it's a good way of potentially cleaning up the codes that are out there. And also it can help us to plan campaigns around different voucher codes that are being attempted on site. And again, trying to capture those audience that are using the wrong codes and things. So that's one of the main focuses, I think, for the coming months, to roll out a better platform for that. But everything else is probably all I can say, but just watch this space.
Yes. Well, I mean, you've got your own priorities coming up for the next few months, I think,
with,
with your birth, your impending birth.
Oh God, I know. As I'm trying to keep my head in work to not panic about it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today to tell us more about the business and about your role, and wish you luck in the new role for the rest of the year, and in both new roles, I should say. So, fingers crossed it goes really well.
Thank you. Yeah. Nervous, but it'll be awesome.
Brilliant. Well, thank you, Katie.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks so much to both Katie and Steve for taking the time to tell us more about their recent updates, and also to Paul, who did a great job of the Moonpool interview. If you'd like to find out more about both of those recent announcements regarding Intently and Moonpool, then you can find them on the blog post for this episode, or just head over to the news and events page on the AWIN website. And on the topic of tracking, Ed, as if we haven't had our fill already, you mentioned there was a recent update from Mozilla on their Firefox browser that had hit the news recently.
Yeah, so this was something I noticed, like an update into the war, the ongoing war on cookies. And Mozilla have rolled out something called Total Tracking Protection, Total Cookie Protection, that comes in for some users, kind of almost an automatic prompt as you open the browser, and very much around restricting third-party cookies, some more steps there to make sure that they're kind of enclosed within their site and make sure there's no sort of site-to-site tracking. So Facebook wouldn't be able to then track you as you're going off to another site, perhaps. It's not hugely impactful on us. You know, it is another reason why things like server-to-server are becoming much more important, because this is just another step we're seeing from the browsers just to kind of start that, taking that privacy conscious shift and just clamping down in certain places and tightening up where they can. You know, this will only, I think, continue incrementally. There'll be more and more changes until we get to something entirely new. And I suppose it's kind of all eyes are on Chrome, and kind of seeing how their little journey down this path kind of eventually unfolds when they go to release it.
Yeah, this feels like another relatively small brick in the wall that's being built by the various gatekeepers and browsers. Obviously, Firefox's share of the kind of global market is much, much smaller than Chrome. I think Chrome's still kind of globally around 70% market share. So that's the big, huge kind of brick. My kind of building vernacular isn't very good. What's a big block?
A monolithic block of stuff.
Exactly, yeah. Chrome is the monolith that's going to be installed at some point. I think it's towards the end of next year now. It feels like it's constantly being delayed, but that's the one that everybody's kind of waiting on. But this is just another indicator of the importance of trying to figure out what's the best solution for this. And as far as Awin's concerned, you know, there's a multi-pronged solution. It involves lots of different stuff, but server-to-server is a really key asset as far as that's concerned. So, I'm sure you'll have future updates and news for us concerning that, and we'll get you back on the podcast yet again for that update.
I cannot wait.
Now, in terms of Awin News, last month saw Awin UK hosting their first Think Tank conference for over 2 years. And this week sees the return of Think Tank DAC, which is being hosted by our German colleagues out in Berlin. The event is a 2-day conference starting on the 21st of June and featuring agendas in both English and German, covering everything from the state of tracking and regulation, as well as our coming product roadmap, and the latest trends from our tech partners, and much, much more. If you're able to attend, it's well worth getting your hands on a ticket. And one topic that I'm sure will rear its head at the event is the rise of influencer marketing within the channel in recent years as well. And testament to that, we recently saw some Awin success at the Influencer Marketing Awards, with the campaign for B&Q taking home the gold award in the best home and garden category. Not forgetting the silver award that the team picked up in conjunction with Etsy for their Mother's Day campaign on TikTok. Now, you can read more about those successes on the Awin blog. But for now, that's all we've got time for on this week's episode of Awin Talks. Thanks for joining us, and it's goodbye from me and goodbye from Ed.
Goodbye.